Hello and welcome to another episode of the Steel and Putter Podcast. I'm Travis, and we're going to dive into the first week of the Trump administration and what it means for student loans. I think there's a lot to talk about, even though as I record this, at the very moment I recorded this, there is not as much action as you might have expected. But I still think that there's a lot of things that have happened that we can kind of use to predict what exactly might happen in the next few months or few weeks even. First off, I want to talk about day one. So day one of the Trump administration, what happened? You know, he did his inauguration, immediately came in, did a ton of executive orders, a lot of them, which is normally what happens when any new president takes office from the opposing party. You come in and you reverse a bunch of things. That's kind of par for the course. Now, I think that it was notable that there was nothing about student loans in that list. That suggests that student loans is fairly far down the priority list on things the Trump administration cares to address. It kind of makes sense, right? You think about things that animate President Trump, it's immigration, energy, DEI, woke, whatever the things you want to discuss is, you know, trade, globalization, right? Those are the sort of things, you know, maybe I throw in Greenland. Those are the things that draw attention, and student loans are something that I think it's something that they want to definitely rein in and change a lot of what President Biden did. But it's also something that we have to think about and recall that in the first Trump administration, he didn't really do anything on student loans except for start the student loan pause, which paused interest and payments for 40 plus million people. So if we think about what happened so far with the Trump administration and student loans, so first off, student loans absent from day one executive actions. And if we think about what did happen day one, the CBP1 app, this basically app that was created by the Biden administration to allow asylum seekers to schedule an appointment with an officer and make an asylum claim formally, that app was rescinded immediately when he came into office and all appointments were canceled. That suggests that promises made to people by the Biden administration cannot be counted on in a Trump administration overall. Anything that President Trump wants to repeal that is not in statute, in the law, something that Congress did, right, he can just repeal if he wants to. The only barrier is the courts and then Congress. Those are the only barriers to him just repealing something that he didn't like that President Biden did. And so a student loan borrower listening to that might say, oh my gosh, what about the IDR waiver? What about the PSLF waiver? What about all these things that Biden did? Well, remember, President Trump would have to, and his administration folks, of course, would have to want specifically to overturn something to make it happen. For something like the IDR waiver, I think that the cat's out of the bag, right? It would be way too difficult to undo all the credit that's already been applied towards IDR forgiveness and to reset that credit to zero, because that's what would have to be done. You know, you might argue, well, that they could retroactively reset it to weighted average. I mean, if they wanted to, they could say, yeah, go back and recalculate all the IDR payment credit for weighted average instead of whatever loan had the most credit. But that's pretty wonky, right? This is an administration that likes branding, likes things that are straightforward, likes things that make sense, that can go on the evening news. I would be very surprised if something like the PSLF waiver and the IDR waiver or anything like that really drew fire from this administration. Now, something that I do expect will draw fire from this administration is what the Biden administration said at the last second, which was trying to really kind of deflect attention from the Trump administration on what the Biden administration has done and what they promised. And specifically, what they promised was that you will not have to make payments until December 2025 at the earliest if you're on the SAVE plan forbearance. And then their excuse was, oh, there's technical updates the student loan servicers have to do so that you can make payments, but you're not going to have to make those payments any earlier than December 2025. This is ultimately Biden administration, again, promising something that it absolutely can't be promising because it's not going to happen. I would be stunned, absolutely stunned, if the Trump administration decided to not require payments for people in the SAVE plan forbearance until December 2025, which is basically almost a year from now, right? That would be absolutely stunning to me. It would be shocking. And the reason is just because the Department of Education can order student loan servicers to do literally whatever it wants, that as long as it's not illegal. So the student loan servicers could get an order from Department of Ed that literally says, Department of Ed says, hey, servicers, contact all your borrowers and tell them that the sky is purple. And the student loan servicers have to be like, yes, when would you like the email to go out? So Department of Ed can do anything it wants to do. And something like IDR recertification date and having zero interest during the SAVE plan forbearance, This is not doesn't even rise to the level of executive action. This is not something that is written into law anywhere. This is just something that the Biden administration just felt like, you know, YOLO, let's do this, right? And anything that is YOLO, let's do this, can be reversed at the drop of a hat at any point. And so I would expect that the point where we might see some of that kind of stuff changed or reversed would be once they've gotten the new Secretary of Education installed, which might take a while. And once you get her, presumably her, Linda McMahon, right? That's the person that Trump said he's nominating. Once you get her installed, then you'll have her set up her own leadership team. I have sources that tell me that there were essentially like well over 100 lawyers at Department of Ed whose essentially job was to basically just go into combat with the student loan servicers and try to, you would say, hold them accountable if you're a fan of what they did. And then if you were somebody in President Trump's camp, you'd probably say interfere with doing their job. There's going to be a lot of partisan warfare on student loans. What matters to you is what actually happens and what actually gets followed up on and what gets repealed, what doesn't. That's what we're focused on here, right? The thought process that I've got is if you have a DOGE commission looking for ways the government can cut and spend less money. If you think about the student loan pause, remember that cost about $5 billion a month when they were pausing everybody's interest. If you're only pausing about 8 or 9 million people in the save plan forbearance, it's about a fifth of the people. So that would mean that the cost of the save plan forbearance with pausing the interest is probably costing around a fifth of that $5 billion a month estimate. So that means it probably cost about $1 billion a month to pause everybody's interest on the save plan forbearance. And that is something that is absolutely at the discretion of Department of Ed. That is something that is not at all required for the Trump administration to offer people. This is something the Biden administration just did with no explicit legal authority to do so. They just told the servicers, hey, pause all the interest, and nobody asked questions or sued over it. So it happened. I think that you will see borrowers asked to make payments very soon. I don't know what very soon means. It could mean the spring. It could mean a little bit later than that. But I do think that they will be able to tell the servicers, hey, go tell people to make payments. Now, when they tell the servicers that, at that point, if the courts don't intervene before then, you'll be asked to recertify your IDR payments. So that means you're going to have to give information to the servicer. You'll have to tell them what your income was for the prior tax year. You'll want to make real sure that you're ready to go when that information comes out about how you need to file. So one example would be probably you would have at least 30 days notice before you were told you had to recertify your income. That's how it's supposed to work. If I had to guess as to how things could play out, if Trump does just come out with an executive action on student loans, I could see it being titled something like the payback your student loans order, right? Or payback your own college, right? Something like that. That's like intended to be provocative, right? And then the order might say something like, you know, this is the date that we're going to start recertifying incomes and you have to recertify no later than this date. And then whenever they give people notice, you know, they give the notice up to 90 days before is kind of how they typically do it. And then they do like a 35 days before telling you, hey, it's due. And then they tell people 10 days before that you're now past due. If you file it now, you're not going to get it in time. And so then we'll switch you over to standard plan if we can't get it done in time. So I think for most people, you could sort of plan on having at least a month's heads up if you have an IDR recertification that happens, which means that some people might want to file an extension to be able to figure out if they need to file separately, because that sometimes comes with higher costs. It could also mean that you file the extension because you just want more time to decide in general. You might just want, you remember, an extension means that you still have to pay all your taxes due by April 15th for the prior year, but that you get until October 15th to actually finalize your return. And that could really be quite helpful for folks, especially folks that are asked to recertify early. I think this is a year where I'd be real careful with how I file up my taxes and when. Remember that an extension, generally speaking, is never going to hurt you badly, because if you do an extension and you're asked to recertify your income and your income shows a higher number than you would get if you actually file your returns, well, you can just go finish up that extension, file it, and then use that new lower taxable income to get a lower payment. Those are just some broad thoughts on what we've learned so far about the priority order of student loans in the Trump administration. But, you know, I think that we need to be aware that things are going to be unpredictable. We have to say that, right? Because the Trump administration, you know, in the first term and just in general, is unpredictable. And I think that unpredictability will be pulled through towards student loans. But I do think that if I was looking for some positive spin on the past few days of the Trump administration beginning, for borrowers. I think that you have to be pretty happy that student loans were not in that initial day one of orders that came out, because that would have signified that it was very important to the Trump administration. That would have signified it was going to be a major focus of the Trump administration. And if you're a borrower going for PSLF or IDR forgiveness, you want it to be completely in the back of their minds, right? You want it to be completely about Greenland or the border or energy or woke. I mean, you really would prefer it being about any of these other things if you're one of these folks that's really worried about student loan programs getting taken away from you. Remember, the stuff that's in the statute is really not at risk. You know, PSLF, IBR, those are in the statute, right? Unless they want to get rid of the filibuster, then they would not be able to repeal those things. And I don't think the Republicans are, you know, would be the ones that would get rid of the filibuster. And I think that that's something that they, even if they would like to be able to pass more things, I think that they'll be not wanting to get rid of that. Now, remember that the big legislative thing that we're watching for is what movement we see in Congress on the big reconciliation bill. So budget reconciliation, that is a fancy term for a bill that gets passed that affects the budget or spending levels and taxes, and it can avoid the filibuster because of these special rules, and you only get one or two bites of the apple to do it. So that means you're going to see a big bill come out at some point with the House GOP has already signaled it's going to have $200 to $300 billion in quote-unquote savings from the student loan program. Now, this could be very well, this could be like fake savings. What I mean by fake savings is if the prior Biden administration has already outlined in the budget, you know, hey, we're going to have, you know, hundreds of billions for student loan relief, then the courts block it, and then a Republican budget comes out and just eliminates it before the courts have had a chance to rule on it. The Republicans might say, hey, look, we just found $200 billion of savings. Look at us. And then we can use those savings to cut taxes on, you know, extending the Trump tax cuts. You wonder how much of these cuts might be like legit cuts, and then how much of these cuts would just sort of be cuts that you can pretend are cuts, but really we're already going to get cut anyway. Now, if you're wondering how might they cut back on these student loans, it's going to be a little tricky because the accounting rules for student loans are an absolute mess in terms of how the government scores things. So the big deal in Washington is this Congressional Budget Office is this nonpartisan scorekeeper, and they're the ones that publish estimates for costs of bills. And there's all these big rules in Congress that say when you create like a new policy, you have to do, you know, pay-fors, which means you have to cut spending somewhere else or you have to increase taxes. And so there's all these very strict rules if you follow these traditional congressional accounting rules on student loan programs. And that's one of the reasons why the executive branch has tried to go so hard on these ICR-derived IDR plans like pay and repay and save, is because it doesn't have to show up in the budget anywhere. It's like this little secret thing that they can sort of kind of push in there that makes it look like the government's making a big profit on student loans because the interest rate is so high. And that's what they're supposed to judge things off of, is a lot of the interest income is supposed to come in. It's supposed to look like it's providing a lot of income when it really isn't. That's one of the reasons why the Grad Plus program got expanded to unlimited borrowing, is because the Grad Plus program looks wildly popular on paper. If you look at the Grad Plus program, it looks really profitable. I meant profitable. Parent Plus, for example, looks extremely profitable on paper because you've got these really high origination fees and interest rates. And so it might feel like it's profitable when in fact we know that with the forgiveness programs out there, with a lot of these waiver programs that have given a lot of borrowers years of extra credit, they're actually a source of huge losses. And so one question would be, well, how do they account for that in a Republican bill? I don't think they're going to provide a bunch of interest relief. I mean, they could potentially, but that's very expensive under these traditional accounting methods. I don't think that we're going to see a big change in how they set the interest rate for student loans, but I do think that you're going to potentially see some stuff that might like curtail borrowing amounts. And if that happens, remember the Republicans only have like a 3 or 4 seat edge in the House. That's nothing. All you got to do is just find like one person in the Republican Congress who's absolutely heartbroken about the loss of Notre Dame in the playoffs to Ohio State, right? And then Notre Dame gets tons of money from the Parent Plus program. And you just call that one representative, right? But you get the maybe the administration for the Fighting Irish gives them a call and, hey, this is our number one priority. Do not cap Parent Plus. It would hurt our school. It would hurt our ability to recruit top student athletes and students. And this would be disastrous for us. We cannot have you vote for this. And, you know, if you don't vote for it, we might love to have you sometime in the president's box, right? We have a lot of very passionate Notre Dame fans on our team, so I want to make sure that they know that I have nothing against the Fighting Irish. Love the Fighting Irish. Great school, right? You know, you could imagine the same conversation taking place with my alma mater, University of Florida, or, you know, like a big football school like University of Alabama, or a school that's like under-resourced that doesn't have as many resources as some of these universities that just have larger endowments, right? Interestingly enough, if I share some interesting conversations I've had privately with folks that are not off the record, they're just interesting conversations with like legislative folks and staff. They basically say that when President Obama tried to cap student loan forgiveness under PSLF and tried to cap Parent Plus in his budget for his second term, it was actually a combination of big brand football schools and HBCUs that combined and formed this very unique political coalition that pressured lawmakers to drop this effort of capping PSLF and eliminating, you know, Parent Plus loans or capping Parent Plus loans, right? So this idea that you can have these unique political coalitions that develop that you wouldn't necessarily automatically assume would be providing pressure to the different groups that would be potentially providing it, right? But if you are anti-capping plus loans, all you have to do if you're a university lobbying group is, again, identify a few swing votes that you could convince to not vote for that provision in the bill. And if you have that small of a margin in the House, if there's something that's a non-negotiable for somebody, like cutting Parent Plus loans or capping them or capping PSLF or something like that that would really hurt universities, in particular American research universities that have a lot of graduate programs, right, that benefit the most from the student loan program because it's unlimited borrowing for those programs, that's why I think that we'll see fewer changes than maybe we think that we might see, especially on the legislative front. And so if most of the action has to happen on the executive action side of the coin, then are we going to see anything from this Eighth Circuit Court? I mean, maybe one day we will, but gosh, it feels like kind of amazing that we pay these judges' salaries and they just seem to sit around and not issue a ruling. I don't understand why, but we're still waiting. So maybe one day they'll issue a ruling, or maybe the Trump administration will just decide to drop the case and make their own ruling, which is also real possible. Those of you listening that are lawyers, you know, apologize for my lack of legal expertise to your level, but I think that that's probably what will happen, is that we will either see a ruling from that court, or we'll see the Trump administration instruct the court, hey, you know, we're dropping this case, we're going to issue our own action on the SAVE plan, and now that we won, to save you the trouble. And remember that whatever's going to happen in terms of executive actions is also subject to being sued over. We could see situations like, you know, how conservative plaintiffs brought cases in conservative jurisdictions for courts to get injunctions or stays while things were being appealed. We could see a very similar strategy with progressive groups that come out with, you know, maybe trying to find those more progressive like jurisdictions to bring a lawsuit in. And then you get maybe a district court or a circuit court to say, hey, you know, this action by, you know, Trump's illegal. You have to keep X program around still. And then you have to wait until the Supreme Court gets to make a say in it, which might take a while. And that could, frankly, be a delaying tactic because, you know, in a second term, you only have 4 years and there's no more way to get more than 4 years, right? So there's very well could be some strategies to try to drag things out or drag out any policy changes in student loans as long as possible with the hopes that maybe you get, you know, a Democratic House in 2026, or maybe you get a different administration in 2028 from a different party. So borrowers, what are your questions? If you have questions that you want to ask about what's going on with student loans, you can ask them. Just go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. And if you type that into your phone after this and you just press reply or press record rather, you can ask whatever question is on your mind about student loans, about the IDR programs, about what's going on with all these potential executive actions that could happen. And I'll do my best to feature some of these on a podcast and on this podcast and, you know, give you kind of my hot takes. I appreciate y'all. We're going to be coming out with even more content in 2025 to help you save more money, grow wealth faster, have less stress. That's my goal. studentloanplanner.com/voicemail if you want to ask a question. And then obviously on the website, Student Loan Planner website, you can book a consult if you think you need to get a refresh for a game planning around, you know, PSLF buyback scenarios, save plan forbearance exit scenarios. You know, when do you switch to a different IDR plan? What should you be doing with your tax returns this year? These are all some of the reasons people are booking that one-off consult with us. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week.